the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
28 present, 12 absent.
Representative Miller?
Speaker, Representatives Anderson, Byrne, Brown, and Lathine are excused from the call of the House today. I'll ask unanimous consent that other absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Our chaplain today is Pastor Matthews of the First Baptist Church. The House please rise for prayer.
Dear Lord, for the day with all its unique privileges and responsibilities, we offer to you our gratitude. Grant that each person in this room, when they come to the end of this day, can observe with satisfaction that they have given their very best effort in everything that they have sought to do. Grant each of us a sense of your divine guidance in this day, and forgive us our failures and mistakes, we pray. Amen.
Representative Parr?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Clerk, please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 46th day.
Representative Miller?
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the journal be approved by this body as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 46th day.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Brings us to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction of the chambers? Representative Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, a good friend, a person with whom I worked for 4 years, who understands broadcasting as well or better than anyone else in the state, the president of Alaska Video Productions in Fairbanks, and a member of the Fairbanks City Council, Ted Lane.
Representative Dankworth?
Mr. Speaker, it's a pleasure to introduce to the body this morning a good friend and constituent, and the president of the Alaska Federation of Republican Women, Mrs. Pauline Martin, in Gallery A. I would also, at this time, like to introduce a very good friend of mine and my campaign manager, Mrs. Cindy Lee, in Gallery B.
Representative Hayes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, I'd also like to introduce a good friend and constituent, Gloria Tokar, president of the Anchorage Republican Women's Club. Also, Mr. Speaker, in Gallery B, a very faithful constituent of mine who helped make it possible for me to be here in the first place and makes it possible for me to remain here by taking care of my office in my absence, Jean Von Dorman.
Representative Freeman?
Mr. Speaker, in the gallery behind me, a constituent of Mr. Gardner and mine, a very fine lady from Ketchikan Gateway Borough, the borough manager, Judy Slager.
Representative Rode?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, it's my pleasure to introduce a constituent of ours. He is the manager of radio station KSRM and also a member of the Kenai Borough Assembly, John Davis.
Representative Gardner?
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery B, also a constituent of Mr. Freeman's and I, from a teacher from Metlakatla, Bob Christensen.
Representative Nakak?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd take pleasure in introducing a personal friend of mine, the individual who is the executive vice president of Cowerick Incorporated, the nonprofit arm of the Bering Straits Native Association, who's down here with the Citizens Participation Conference. Unfortunately, he's stuck on diomede, so he wasn't able to be here this morning. Thank you.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, and Gallery B is the wife of a very good friend of a number of ours, and best buddies to my wife, and a good critic of myself, Pat Jackson. Is she there? Okay.
Representative Rudd.
I just wanted to direct an inquiry to Representative Nackek. Did he say that Diomede needs an airstrip?
Are there further guests for introduction? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
I have read the following resolutions and am transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Senate Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 97, amended Senate, establishing general funds available for appropriation for fiscal year 1979 and making tentative allocations to program categories, Legislative Resolve Number 6. Senate Joint Resolution Number 33, relating to the Head Start Program, Legislative Resolve Number 5, signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has passed the following and it is returned. House Bill Number 114, establishing a fire suppression fund. This bill has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has failed to concur in the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 40, State and Municipal Employment, namely House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 40, amended House, and respectfully requests the House to recede from its amendments. In the event that the House does not recede, the President has appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the House to consider the above bills. Senator Curtula, Chairman, Senator Orsini, Senator Ferguson. The Senate has passed the following and it is transmitted herewith for consideration. Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 41, amended by the Resources Committee, relating to the forthcoming action by the U.S. Congress regarding D2 land withdrawals.
Referred to the Resources Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
Dear Mr. Speaker, the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered the Local Boundary Commission recommendations for annexation of territory to the Haynesboro dated January 18, 1978. It is the recommendation of the committee that the Haynesboro annexation be allowed to take place. Yours sincerely, signed Lisa Rudd, Chair. The Special Committee on the Alaska Permanent Fund has had House Bill 596, an act relating to non-renewable resource revenues, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 596 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Greening, Chairman, concurred in by Meekins, Haugen, Gardner, Miles, Greening, and Schaefer. Mr. Hayes has no recommendation. House Bill 596 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 704, an appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Land and Water Management, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Cooper, Freeman, Rode, Haugen, Schaefer, Buchholz, Duncan, and Greening. Having no recommendation, Guy, Meekins, and Swanson. House Bill 704 has no further referral. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 726, a special appropriation to the Department of Education, Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, to implement multilingual news coverage of the 1978 legislative session, under consideration, and a majority of the committee reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, signing do pass, Bennett, Nackack, and Cotton. Signing do pass if amended, Buchholz. Signing do not pass unless amended, Parr. Having no recommendation, Chatterton and Phillips. House Bill 726 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 773, a special appropriations to the Alaska Trollers Association, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 773, Finance, and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Duncan, Buchholz, Rode, Cooper, Haugen, and Swanson. Mr. Schaefer has no recommendation. House Bill 773 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions and citations. Representative Urien? House, please stand at ease. House, please come to order. We're down to introduction of resolutions and citations. Any resolutions or citations for introduction?
A citation in recognition of National Engineers Week by Representative Hayes. Citation congratulating the Tri-Valley Warriors by Representative Swanson. Citation commending George Jakinski by Representative Malone and Representative Rode. I have no further citations for introduction, Mr. Speaker. I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 706 by Dankworth, Swanson, Akers, Bennett, Carpenter, Haugen, Kelly, Lathine, Loveseth, Phillips, Rode, and Urien. Sponsor substitute for House Bill number 706, an act prohibiting public drunkenness.
Referred to the Committees on Health, Education, Social Services, and Judiciary.
House Bill 860 by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to mopeds.
Referred to the Judiciary Committee.
House Bill 861 by the Finance Committee, an act making special appropriations to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
We're down to consideration of the calendar. However, at our initial quorum call this morning, there are 28 members present, insufficient to advance bills. So this time we'll take another quorum call. The question is, are you present? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please take the quorum.
Thirty-five present, five absent.
Clerk, please read the first item on the calendar.
Senate Bill number 129 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to medical assistance for needy persons and providing for an effective date. The Committee on HES has had Senate Bill 129 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Byrne, Cotton, Chatterton, Nackack, and Parr. Mrs. Buchholz signed no recommendation at this time. Phillips and Osi has no recommendation. The Committee on Finance has had Senate Bill 129 under consideration. And a majority of the committee recommends it do pass, and the physical note is not approved. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Greening, Duncan, Swanson, Meekin, Schaefer, Haugen, Rode, Freeman, and Cooper. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 129 being considered engrossed, advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The clerk, please read Senate Bill 129 in third reading.
Senate Bill number 129 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to medical assistance for needy persons and providing for an effective date.
Senate Bill 129 is before you. Is there any discussion? Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only explanation I'd like to give, a very short one, is that this bill would provide the people who are under 21 years of age who are now at the API in Anchorage the kind of cost reimbursements that we would get from the federal government. Previously, this was not allowed, and this bill would just enable the state to get reimbursement from the federal government under the Medicaid program.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question is, shall Senate Bill 129 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Thirty-five yeas, no nays, five excused.
So Senate Bill 129 has passed the House. The bill does carry an effective date clause. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that the roll call on Senate Bill 129 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 77 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Council relating to reapportionment litigation. The Committee on State Affairs has had Senate Concurrent Resolution 77 under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Nackack, McKinnon, and Miles. Signing do not pass, Dankworth, Lathine, and Kelly. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, this Senate concurrent resolution is an outgrowth of a motion that was proposed by one of the senators on the Legislative Council. If memory serves, that was it was unanimously approved by the Council, although maybe there was a vote against it, I'm not sure, but I think it was unanimous. In any case, it would, under the language of the bill, or the resolution, direct the Legislative Council to intervene in the reapportionment suit that has been brought by two individuals against the state and is now pending in federal court. I might say, Mr. Speaker, that, and I'd like for this to be part of the record, that although the word in here is Legislative Council is directed, the Vice Chairman, Senator Ziegler, and I, with the permission of this body, are interpreting that word to be authorized. In other words, we consider this a potentially very useful tool, an arrow in our bow if we want to use it, but we may not use it. If this legislation passes, it'll be on the table, available to the Legislative Council to use if it's determined that it would help in the suit. On the other hand, just the very existence of the passage of this bill may be sufficient. Senator Ziegler has been working very closely with the administration, with the Attorney General's office in this area, and everything that we seek may be achievable without even taking the time or expense of going to court. But in any case, it is, I think, a very useful resolution. I think it's a very appropriate resolution, as I don't want to get into the deep merits and demerits of the reapportionment suit that's before us. I think we're all in this body very familiar with it. I will say that the Constitution presently says that reapportionment will take place following the federal census every 10 years. This would require the suit that's been brought by the two individuals against the state would require a reapportionment before even the next election. I think all of us have to recognize that even if some of us think that the reapportionment might be a good idea, there's reason to believe that the reapportionment would not be all that logical, not all that factual. The reapportionment would be based on telephone installations, sewage deliveries, all sorts of artificial criteria. And for that reason, as well as a number of others, Mr. Speaker, I think it's very well that the legislature should have the right, have the availability to enter the case and recommend to the court that this special reapportionment not take place, that instead we await the constitutionally mandated reapportionment that will, of course, take place in 1980, whether we like it or not. Thank you.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, any reapportionment that could take place between now and the next general election would be more logical and more practical than what we have today. Now, the people in Anchorage, whether you like it or not, are not represented adequately in this body. The more people there than what this represents by the membership here in this body on the other end. Regardless of what this resolution says, it's harmful to the interests of the legislature, members, and the public. It's not harmful to the public, Mr. Speaker. It is harmful to some of the members of this body. And the purpose of this resolution is self-preservation for some of the members of the legislature.
Representative Nackack.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I beg to differ with the minority leader. Very simply, the expense of going through two reapportionments, we're required to go through one after the census, and the expense he's talked about being fiscally responsible. As a matter of fact, the minority has has always mentioned being fiscally responsible. I don't know what the cost would be of going through a reapportionment this year or next year, and then after the 1980 census. I beg to differ that his claim that Anchorage is less than fairly represented. I state that I cover probably 80,000 square miles, approximately 10,000 people. Maybe that's maybe I have less persons in my district than Spinard. But you know, then again, I can't drive to all of my constituents either. I oppose the thought that, and I disagree with the thought that Anchorage is less than fairly represented. The fact remains that come the 1980 census and the reapportionment thereafter, my district will probably be enlarged anyway. I'm not interested in seeing it enlarged, and the responsibilities I have towards more constituents speeded up if I were to be elected. When that in my estimation and in all probability will happen after 1980 anyway. I support the resolution as a member of the Legislative Council, as a member of the legislature from Nome. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, the minority leader said the issue is self-preservation. I don't think that's true, Mr. Speaker. I think the issue is preservation of the constitutional process. 2 years after the last decennial census, Anchorage may already have lost, you know, its percentage thing. 2 years after that, it would have lost more because Anchorage is the fastest growing community in this state. But the framers of the Constitution recognize that you can't have a bloomin' reapportionment every 2 years just to take care of some population growth. So the constitutional framers, in their wisdom, says every 10 years, whether you like it or not, you're going to have a reapportionment. And in 1980, whether we like it or not, there's going to be a census, and immediately thereafter, as fast as the wheels of government can turn, there'll be a reapportionment. It's a constitutional matter, Mr. Speaker, and it's purely and simple then.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, if it's not for self-preservation, then why would the legislature get involved? The suit has been filed by two individuals against the administration. That's the way it goes, against the governor, Hammond. The attorney general, it's his job to uphold the Constitution of the state. And he will handle the suit. He will handle that. That's his job. Why should we even get involved? How much money should we spend for our self-preservation?
Representative Miller.
If I could just give a brief response, Mr. Speaker. We should get involved because it's us we're talking about. If we're not interested, who in the world is?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, of course, it's somewhat of a constitutional consideration. Even more to the point, any sort of substantive litigation sets precedent, as we all know, under case law, and it would appear to me that this might very well establish a dangerous precedent. Speaking to exactly what the majority leader spoke about, that if we reapportion 2 years before constitutionally the constitutional mandate requires that, then why in the world wouldn't we do it 2 years 2 years after the constitutional mandate, and then 2 years after that, and why couldn't we have a special reapportionment because a wave of somebody rather came up here based on some sort of impact. I think that precedent is germane. But Mr. Speaker, even more to the point, the way we all know what's coming down, it's been filed by partisans, the national officer of a political party in the state. So really, it's sort of a partisan housekeeping measure, Mr. Speaker. The the Republicans would like to clean house and draw the lines and thus sweep out some Democrats, and of course the Democrats would like to keep their house in order and at least in Anchorage and draw the, you know, and have the lines remain there, and to a number of at least liberal Democrats, they're very concerned about the impact, a premature impact, an impending impact that, like it or not, will occur regarding Bush Alaska, and so I guess end of speech. Thanks.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, this is not a partisan issue. In fact, it's going to be the legislature in Hammond versus Price and Grow. That's Republicans and Democrats. It's going to be the partisan suits have been the legislature versus Hammond. Now, we've had several of those. This is the first time we've joined with the governor in a suit. I suppose for that reason, I ought to vote for it.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, in case anybody's wondering, including the minority leader, why we have to enter it, I think it's that we have to help keep the governor honest in this suit, and that's really what it's all about. And the other point to be made is that we don't really know what the results of this suit might be because it's filed in federal court, but one of the possible results is that under a federally mandated reapportionment, we might, and there is some precedent looking at other federal cases in this, that the reapportionment might call for all single-member districts, both for the House and the Senate. And I think with the way our communities and districts lay in Alaska now, that'd be a very unfortunate circumstance. It might split a lot of communities in half or in other strange formulas if they were all single-member districts.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to address these political issues. In the first place, I don't even know enough about the districts in Anchorage to speak to them, and I don't know if a reapportionment would help the Democrats or Republicans. And furthermore, Mr. Speaker, I don't really care. My understanding is that ever since the days of Supreme Court Chief Justice Marshall, that the court interprets the Constitution, if there's any doubt about what it says. And this suit is going to the court, and the court's going to interpret it. Now, Mr. Speaker, what I don't understand, and I do not think, unfortunately, my colleague from Ketchikan told me, really, was why the legislature should intervene. I don't see, from the resolution itself, any justification for such intervention. Unless I'm convinced of that, I cannot favor the resolution.
Representative Phillips.
Just a point I'd like to ask. Are there any fiscal implications with this resolution, or do we have an estimate if we intervene?
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, obviously, if we intervene, as I mentioned earlier, we may not. Just the passage of this law may give us all the leverage that we need to make sure that the case is pursued, you know, with a high degree of integrity. And but if we intervene, obviously we'll probably hire some outside counsel because our own staff upstairs is pretty well snowed under. That'd probably be about $5,000, but it won't require an additional appropriation because there is monies in the contingency fund of the legislative council at the present time that would more than adequately take care of it.
Representative Meekins. House, please stand at ease. House, please come to order. Question before the House is, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution number 77 pass the House? Is there further discussion? You ready for the question? Stating the question is, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution 77 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, Representative Greening. Any other member? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 9 Nays, 5 Excused.
And so Senate Concurrent Resolution number 77 has passed the House. Representative Miller.
Speaker, a legislative citation has been placed on all members' desks by sponsored by Representative Hayes. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the citation be taken up at this time as a special order of business.
Hearing no objection, take the resolution up as a special order of business, the citation up as a special order of business. Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the citation and ask unanimous approval.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The record show that the citation was adopted unanimously. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'm sorry, I guess you hadn't actually announced unfinished business, but I guess presume we're under it.
We're down to unfinished business. Representative Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, the Senate earlier sent us a message that they had failed to concur in House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 40, State Municipal Employment. I think the Senate position apparently is at variance with the state. Therefore, I'll move that this body concur in the Senate amendments, or excuse me, that the House recede from the House amendments to Senate Bill number 40. I'll ask the members to vote no.
Question is, shall the House recede from its amendments to Senate Bill 40? Ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
5 Yeas, 30 Nays, 5 Excused.
So the House has failed to recede from its amendments to Senate Bill 40. This time we'll appoint a conference committee consisting of Representative Brown as chairman, Representative Rudd, and Representative Dankworth. The clerk will please notify the Senate. Is there further unfinished business to come before the House? Special orders. Are there any special orders? Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the privilege of the floor to comment on the lack of justice in the political arena and ironies.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To start with, for the first one, there is no justice in politics. And then we'll talk about the ironies. Mr. Speaker, in the in yesterday's paper, when I was going through the papers, I noticed something that seemed very strange to me, and it concerns one of my colleagues in the House, and I'd like to touch on the first one. Starts with it's a letter to the editor in Anchorage paper called titled Land Ownership. And it starts out, it says, "We know what's best for you attitude of Alaskans and federal politicians epitomized by Representative Bob Bradley," and so forth, so forth. Mr. Speaker, I've noticed on numerous occasions in the last few days letters to the editor and even editorials castigating Mr. Bradley for his position and stand on land ownership. And as a matter of fact, there's some of the members on the floor have even had some amusement at Mr. Bradley and myself's expense by referring to the Father and Son Act, and I don't object to that. I hope Mr. Bradley doesn't. But as a matter of fact, I suppose that what some of the people found amusing was the difference in age, maybe a difference in political philosophy, and you know, that may seem strange to some people, but Mr. Bradley is young enough to be my son, and he does have a more liberal political philosophy than I do, but that doesn't bother me. I don't think Mr. Bradley is any more liberal than I was at his age, and I doubt very seriously if I'm any more conservative than he'll be if he lives to be mine. So I think that, you know, talking about ironies, I think that maybe it would be worthwhile for some of the new members to explain how I got acquainted with Mr. Bradley and how we work together or against each other most of the time. When Mr. Bradley first came here as a freshman, he was in the right organization, and he came up as a chairman of a committee, and this happened to be at a time when I was being punished for some sins by the people who were in charge at the time, and therefore I was kicked around from just about, you know, they picked out about the worst first committee that they thought would be where I would fit, and that ended. I ended up on Mr. Bradley's committee, and irony of it, the people that were crucifying me at that time, I think that was, as I understood, the purpose was to write me out of the political picture. And most of them ain't here. I am. That's an irony. But Mr. Bradley was a freshman, and because there were others like myself who were being punished, we ended up on his committee. And because of Mr. Bradley's inexperience, it was only about 10 days till he lost control of his committee. And that was nothing really to be proud of, using, you know, all the tricks you learn, little tricks you learn as you go along in politics. Well, we practiced them on Mr. Bradley. And so the leadership decided that they would help him, so they changed one of the members, and he lasted about 10 days more, and he lost it again. And the next step was they decided to help him out by packing his committee, and they added two more members, and he lasted 3 weeks that time, and then he was in a doubtful situation. Now, I have all the things that I have done to Mr. Bradley. As a matter of fact, to some of them, I was even so bad that they embarrassed me, and I apologized to him, and I told him, don't feel bad about it. If for nothing else, you will be a better chairman in the future. Now, Mr. Bradley did survive, and I survived, and things changed a little. But the one thing that, as I said, I don't, it doesn't embarrass me if you want to refer to Mr. Bradley and I and the father and son bit, because Mr. Bradley, I found out, although I still don't agree with some of his politics, is not a mean or a small-minded man. And he was pretty forgiving of all the dirty tricks I pulled on him. And the next year, he was very nice and very polite, and he didn't bottle up any of my bills, and I got a fair hearing all the time. And I appreciate that. And I, as a consequence, when I first got into the land bit and tried to do something about the shortage of land and private ownership, Mr. Bradley was very interested, and he encouraged me and helped me all he could. As a matter of fact, although we had some, I think, 29 or 30 co-sponsors on the bill, Mr. Bradley probably did more than any other person in there to help me, because he believed in it. And Mr. Speaker, it bothers me, and today, to pick up the paper, and just because somebody else came along with another idea, to hear Mr. Bradley, or see Mr. Bradley being castigated for trying to do something against the interest of people as far as land is concerned. That's not the case. And I think it's terribly unfair for people to do that. I know they do it out of ignorance, but it offends my sense of fair play to see it happening. I hope Mr. Swanson doesn't take my defense of Mr. Bradley as an endorsement, because I don't endorse anybody in the primary. So, okay, that's that one. Now the next one that kind of really got to me. I read in the paper, in Anchorage paper, Times, and I'll just quote you part of it. It says, Chairman of the House State Affairs Committee, Representative Bob Bradley, Democrat of Anchorage, who one of his colleagues said is an outspoken opponent of the capital move. And I thought, well, that's a strange thing for Mr. Bradley to say, you know, considering political realities. And then I pick up the Juneau paper, and I see a picture of Mr. Bradley, and it says, Anchorage Democrat Representative Bob Bradley carrying the banner for the capital move. Now, Mr. Speaker, I said that Mr. Bradley was not a small-minded man. He's a, He might be a bit devious if it was required, but I don't think he's stupid. And Mr. Speaker, if Mr. Bradley is a statewide candidate, if he's going to be for the capital move anywhere, he's going to be for the capital move in Anchorage. If he's going to be against it anywhere, he's going to be against it in Juneau. And he can't, I just can't believe that he would get this thing so turned around that he would, you know, misplace these things. So it bothers me to see Mr. Bradley being taken advantage of, but as I said in the beginning, there ain't no justice in politics.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Freeman is a hard act to follow, but I would like the privilege of the floor to speak on Parkinson's law and some of its relationships to state activities.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I guess we're all familiar with Parkinson's law. It was based on a study done of the British Admiralty once, and the smaller the Navy got, the bigger the bureaucracy back in the in Whitehall or someplace got. And of course, one of the corollaries, Mr. Speaker, that law is that the increase is always greatest at the top. You know, you always keep getting more admirals and fewer seamen, or more generals and fewer privates. Mr. Speaker, we had put on our desk yesterday a report by Holman McDowell on state and federal employment in Juneau. Two very brief points in there I'd like to mention. Central state government positions have increased at a faster rate than regional and local positions. Secondly, as found in past years, there is a continuing absence of significant regional organizational structure in all but a few departments. Mr. Speaker, Parkinson's law is in operation in state government. It's bad. It ain't no way at all you can call it good. It's just bad, plumb bad. Mr. Speaker, the over-centralization of state government is something that is really, I think, should be of concern to all of us. I introduced last spring House Bill 471 to mandate a decentralization of state government. Whether the capital is in Juneau or in Willow, as far as I'm concerned, we need to decentralize. Mr. Speaker, if the capital move is to go, the decentralization should ideally take place at that time. That would be the ideal time for it to happen. That would avoid more disruption than at any other time that you could do it. Mr. Speaker, it is a well-known fact that no bureaucracy can or will reform itself. If it's going to happen, it has to happen from the outside, and of course, we are the ones who will have to make it happen. Mr. Speaker, I've noticed much comment in the paper lately about something called a split move. Apparently, some people are in favor of this and others are against. But I noticed that the split move, Mr. Speaker, calls for leaving somewhere around 500 data processing people in Juneau or something of that sort. And Mr. Speaker, I would suggest that as this body considers the bills which will be coming before us along that line, that we take into serious consideration the possibility of decentralizing. Juneau is the obvious place, the obvious regional headquarters for the whole Southeast. It would make a lot of sense to me if the move does take place in reducing the impact on Juneau to increase the number of people in the regional district, regional office here, rather than having all those people go. I think that this is only logical, only sensible. I know that there are very strong feelings on the whole issue, and I'm not trying to rouse those feelings, but I do think that we should certainly take into consideration this chance and our ideal chance to decentralize the state government. Thank you.
Representative Rudd.
May I have the privilege of the floor to comment on Mr. Freeman's comments?
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Rudd.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Freeman mentioned the committee that was chaired by Representative Bradley in the last legislature, and he mentioned how some people were put on it as punishment and some people were put on it to pack the committee, and of course that raised a burning question in my mind, because when I joined the committee, I mean I joined the legislature in 1976, I was put on that committee. So the question is, was I put on as punishment or in order to pack the committee? As a matter of fact, the committee was a wonderful experience for me, and I learned an awful lot awful fast because of the composition of the committee. And I developed a deep respect for Mr. Bradley as chairman of the committee. I thought he ran it very well. So I still have to find out whether it was punishment or whether it was an attempt to pack the committee. Maybe Mr. Bradley can enlighten me now that a couple of years have gone by. In addition, Mr. Speaker, I would like to bring you up to date a little bit on the fortunes of the Alaska cross-country skiers in the World Championship cross-country ski meet that's now taking place in Finland. In the 10-kilometer event, Alaskan women came in 24th and 25th, which is very good time in the world competition. Allison Owen Spencer was 24th. Lynn von der Heide was number 25, and they were about 2.5 minutes behind the leader. The team director, John Bauer, was quoted as saying that the results show that the women's team have made a lot of progress as a team since the U.S. started skiing in the 50s. This means that as a whole, they are moving up. When Spencer and von der Heide blew away the rest of the field in the national championships in Anchorage in January, Bauer said that from the looks of things, it would be another year before the women could break into the top 10 on the international circuit. Now, he says, if Allison and Lynn improve as much this year as they did last year, then we should have some top 10 performances. So our Alaska cross-country skiers are really moving into the world championship.
Are there any more special orders? Representative Urien?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to take this opportunity to answer Mrs. Rudd's question as to whether she was placed on that committee to pack it or to punish. Mrs. Rudd, you were placed on that committee to pack it, but it turned out to be a punishment.
Are there any more special orders? Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Gardner?
Judiciary Committee will meet at 3 o'clock today on the criminal code, and then we'll be meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Further announcements? Representative Parr?
Mr. Speaker, the House Committee will meet at 3 today. We have House Bill 489, Labor Relations Between School Boards and Employees, and House Bill 681, State Aid for School Construction. Mr. Speaker, on the members' calendars, only House Bill 681 is listed, but there are two other bills on that subject, House Bill 700 and 853, and we will consider all three bills as a package.
Representative Bradley?
Mr. Speaker, House State Affairs at 1:15 this afternoon will be taking up two bills and a resolution, House Bill 701 and 702 dealing with Aleutian Ferry Service, and HGR 54, request for improved postal service in Sand Lake. And Representative Cooper need not be there to carry his resolution.
Representative Osterbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Resource Committee will meet today at 1:30 p.m. Taking up House Bill 791, Oil and Gas Production, House Bill 792, Gas and Oil Fields, House Joint Resolution 60, Removing Solid Waste from Federal and State Federal Lands in Alaska.
Representative McKinnon.
The Commerce Committee will meet at 1:15 today in Senator Meeland's office to use the teleconferencing network to take testimony on fire and property insurance rates and availability from around the state. We'll also meet Monday morning at 8 to take up House Bill 703, State Savings and Loan Associations, and House Bill 614, Motor Vehicle Insurance Policies.
Further announcements? Representative Guy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For those of you that may be interested, the Subcommittee on Administration of Justice will be meeting tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. House Finance Committee Room.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to at this time move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Chatterton be excused from the call of the House on the 27th of June.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the dates indicated. Any further announcements? Further business to come before the House? Representative Miller.
The Juvenile Committee on Assaults Against Women will be having an information and legislative planning session for satellite shelters in communities of Nome, Bethel, Fairbanks, and Juneau this afternoon from 4 to 6 in room 503 of the Goldstein Building. That's down across the street from the NBFA Bank. All legislators are invited to attend that meeting. That's, again, from 4 to 6 in room 503 of the Goldstein Building. Speaker, if there's no further business to come before the body, I'll ask unanimous consent we stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, House is adjourned.